Well, actually, now.
Yeah, I say, now you do marketing.
Now I'm a vice president.
Exactly. Vice president of whatever I say it is. Bitch. You should put that on your card. Vice president of whatever I say it is, bitch.
Comma, bitch.
Oh, yeah, of course. You're going to properly punctuate it, obviously.
Of course. Hi, and welcome to Gen Extemporaneous. This is a podcast where I come up with an idea, I do some research, I grab a bottle of wine, I bring everything to Mark, and he pontificates. What does it mean to be a fan? What does it mean to be a stan? Where does fan work fit in? In today's episode, we're going to speak to some of these questions by offering personal thoughts, as well as sharing some of the research that we've been doing. We're going to be interrogating the subject using a variety of theoretical approaches, and while we are going to be speaking about a number of fandoms, the primary case study for this episode will be Whitey Nation, a fandom composed of Gen X and Boomer women who have found an unlikely hero in a 23-year-old Canadian TikTok creator named William White. Thanks for listening to us each week. If you do like us, we hope you'll share us with a friend. Hi, Mark Snedeker.
Hello, Christina LaRusso. I'd like to point out that while there is no wine present, there is a bottle of Windex.
Nice.
So, okay, well, go for that.
All right. So,
how about those fans?
How about those fans? What we have discovered past months of doing this research, or at least I have discovered.
Now, when you say
we,
what you really mean is you.
Is me. Okay. I think that people like to have things in categories, right? So you
absolutely.
To have fans and anti-fans, and then set this dichotomy up, and it's a false dichotomy. So let's just sort of get that out there.
Okay, it's a false dichotomy.
Because it's much more complex than that.
It is. It is a false dichotomy in that you have to be one or the other, right? Or
right.
that they're monolithic, homogenous groups.
Right.
Right. But it is a real distinction, right? There is a real category, and it's a useful definition to say anti-fan, fan. While
yes.
the behaviors may be similar in a lot of ways.
Yes.
There is a difference. A useful difference, do you think? I think, but you are the expert.
The behaviors are similar. The thing that is different is the emotion or the affect where all of this is coming from, right?
Yeah.
Like, so we'll get into this more as we go through this episode, but it's just anti-fan. It's coming from a place of dislike for the media, whatever the media is.
Right. Whatever the media or content or sport or whatever it is, they're against it.
Right.
Or the team or the artist or whatever.
Right. Fanning, the pure emotion, the place that's coming from, the affect is love or
yes.
supposedly love.
Or desire.
Right? I guess so. It depends.
As is the case with me and the Cowboys.
Right. Oh, God. Wow.
I'm just kidding.
Wow, that sounds
really
very personal.
Them. They let me down every year.
They do. Okay.
So, but there are definitely some things in common. For example, if you are an anti-fan or a fan, you have some level of emotional engagement with the particular media we're discussing. Because pick a random thing that I really just don't care one way or another about. Adele, right?
Mm-hmm.
Don't have any strong feelings one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a fan. I'm not an anti-fan. But that changes if I become an anti-Adele. Now, mm-hmm. I have a certain level of investment in her career, person, whatever. It's negative. But in the same way that a fan engages with that media, you're now engaging with it as well, just a different take, right? Whereas the non-fan
mm-hmm.
doesn't give a fuck. They hear an Adele song? Yeah, that's a good song, whatever. And
or no, it's not a good song.
Or they're like,
just turn it
I don't really
on.
Care.
I don't really care.
I don't need to hear, you know, Hello Again for the 516th time.
I really am there with those people.
You're over
I
that
love
song.
Adele, but I like
that
some,
song
some
is,
of them
so
is so overplayed.
Overdone. Yeah.
Yeah.
And honestly, if they play it another dozen or so times in my hearing, I could turn into an anti-fan. That's possible. I could make that.
Poor Adele.
I could make that shift. She's very talented, no doubt. She did. I actually saw her win an Adele sound-alike
contest. I know. I love that. Did she had like a false nose
yeah.
on. That was really good.
That was
and
hilarious.
Everyone in the audience
like,
was like,
"Oh my god, she's bang on!"
Oh my god! Wait, and they're like, "Wait, no." Is
yeah.
that her?
Is
it
she
is.
Lip
it's
syncing?
Her. It's
oh,
her.
Oh, it's her. It's Adele with a fake ass nose.
With a fake nose. Oh, that was a good one. But I think that this is pretty common for any field of study
yeah.
where we like to find patterns, right?
That's how we analyze
things. And I think that we like to say, well, it sits in this box, and then there's this box right. that's that. And then we're going to talk about the interplay between those two boxes.
Yes.
But as with any course of study, fandom studies, they recognize this.
They're saying,
okay, hang on. And in fact, there's a great book, and it is called Anti-Fandom. It's an anthology. Anti-Fandom, Dislike and Hate in the Digital Age. It was edited by Melissa A. Click.
But who wrote it?
A bunch of people.
Is that what you meant by anthology?
Yes, that's what I... It's a bunch of essays. Essays by fandom scholars. So what they are doing is they're talking about anti-fandom and how does that look and how does the study of anti-fandom begin or what is it, the earlier beliefs about it? And then successively each author in this volume are going through and they're saying, like, we've got to complicate this. This is a more complex situation than just
but that's how all,
good guys versus bad
that's
guys.
That's how all research analysis goes, right? So I'm not familiar with really any field other than philosophy, and I'm only barely familiar with that. But the first thing you do is you start drawing distinctions, right?
Right.
So you're like, okay, let's talk about mind. Okay, so this is mind, this is not mind. Now we're like, well, mind is actually more complicated than that. And then you further, you know, delineate and define your subject. I'm sure in history you do something similar.
100%. It can get, you know, it gets very nuanced. You get into revisionist history and that's what's the interesting thing. That's the juicy stuff. And that's what, you know, a lot of what I'm reading in this volume is sort of interrogating where fan studies were and how we got there. One of the things that I'm learning, and believe me, I am by no means a fandom scholar.
You might be by now.
I wish I was.
You've read a lot of shit.
Oh, I want to read more. I honestly, the other night you asked me if I could change things up and do
a
different podcast. Well, no,
you
said to me if I could change things up
and
do a different podcast.
Yeah. What would
be the podcast I would want to do? And I said, I'd probably want to do fandom studies.
Yeah.
I probably would want to dig into because it's so rich and it's everywhere.
Yeah.
Literally everywhere.
And I could tell so many jokes.
No, you could. The high likelihood of Gen Extemporaneous tripping down this path for quite a while
is good, right?
It's a
non-zero chance.
Yeah, exactly. But early on, fandom studies was kind of trying to, I think, correct a view that fandom is in some way weird or bad or crazies.
Well, and for a long time, that's unless you were in a fandom, it was. Maybe still, I don't know. But it was always, especially by the media, they would kind of roll their eyes at it, right?
Well, right.
You get some white guy in a tie going, so you like these Darren Duran guys from England, huh? You know, and whatever. It's like, do you think you should be home working on your homework?
Well, fandom, I think especially can be a place of escape. Remember, one of the key uses and gratifications of fandom is diversion.
Yes.
And I think that fandom can be a useful place of exploration and diversion and maybe escapism or groups of people who might, at-risk groups.
Sure.
Queer folks, women, young women in particular, liking certain kinds of romance books or romance series or whatever else, but not necessarily young women. Young women liking bands, liking having crushes on pop stars, on, you know, like Harry Styles or on, well, in my case, it was Duran Duran. And you're right.
Ethnic
minorities are also can find a place in fandoms.
Basically, as a cis white male, then I am not allowed to be a fan of anything.
No,
I agree with that. I think that's true.
No.
I shouldn't be a fan of anything.
But you are excused your fandom.
Yes, because it's...
Because typically your fandom is going to be...
Yeah.
What?
Well, like sports.
Sports.
And
I, literally at Target today, I just came here after doing
a grocery shop. Are you mad at
Target now? No. Oh, okay. Here's the thing. Because fandom is so much in my head, I I see it everywhere. Like, I see fandom everywhere now.
Everybody's wearing a Miami Dolphins jersey.
No. I pulled into a parking spot, and right next to me was this truck that was decked out fully in Buffalo Bills regalia.
Yeah.
Like, literally
everything
painted on the truck was the Bills logo, and they had the flags and everything else. They are all in.
They're like, we don't care. We haven't won a Super Bowl ever.
No one blinks an eye at that.
No.
Because it's the male purview.
It's the main, what passes as mainstream culture.
Right.
So it's not a diversion, or it's not a departure from mainstream culture. So, of course, everybody's like, yeah, that's super normal that your whole identity is on a sports team that you've never played for.
It's wild.
You want to see that in extreme? Go watch some proper football. If you go to these people live and die for their home team.
100% they do. And, I mean, get violent.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, the football hooligans is a real thing. But anyway, so the purview of men in sports, the fandom in sports, that's seen like that's okay.
That's normal. Yeah.
But anything else, you're either, you're a geek, a weirdo, a nerd, and all of those things, plus also.
I'm in the chess club. Physics club.
Demented and sad, but social. All right. So all of this to say that this is going to be a complex conversation. We are going to be talking in this episode about fans, fan behavior, stands, how they behave. I'm going to give examples of how the uses and gratifications model plays out in particular, in particular fandoms and specifically probably mostly the Willverse. What we're going to describe as we're talking about fans is behavior that is actually very similar to some of the behavior of anti-fans.
Yeah, I think you're correct where you're drawing that similarity. It's not even as different as two sides of the same coin. It's really just a slightly different side of the coin.
Yes,
right?
Because
it's very similar in many ways.
Because fans can become anti-fans
easily
in the blink of an eye.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even mean that they fully hate the media. They may hate something about a
portion
of the media.
I'll give you an example. There were lots of U2 fans. And then, you know when it turned?
When the iPod thing happened.
When they preloaded the iPod with that U2 song, which, by the way, was a really pretty good song.
But anyway, I do remember that.
And then, man, the U2 anti-fan was born.
It was just an overreach.
Right. A marketing overreach, which you really can't trust marketing people with anything.
How dare you? Well, I'm in business development.
There you go.
All right. So let's first do a quick rundown for those of our listeners who have not heard the whole past rigmarole about what the Willverse is.
Sure.
I named it in the introduction Whitey Nation.
That's their self-assigned appellation.
They assigned themselves that name because the focus of the fandom is a 20, he's now 23, at the time he was 21-year-old TikTok creator. I use the term loosely.
Personality, whatever.
But he's TikTok personality actually is probably better because the creator part of it, in some cases, not just in Will's case, in other cases, it's really not about creating. It's about the personality. It's about using it as a platform to go live and talk to your fans and do battles and things like that.
Right.
Okay. So his last name is White, and he, I guess, at some point was referring to himself as Whitey. Your boy Whitey. Well,
and that was his screen name, right? Whitey18.
Whitey18. And so now they are calling themselves Whitey Nation.
In one of the all-time great tone-deaf fandoms. It's like, we're going to be Whitey Nation. Do you guys think that sounds a little, like white supremacist maybe? They're like, oh, that's his name. Like, we know that's his name, but if his name was Nazi Notzerson, you're not going to be, you're not going to be Nazi Nation. You'll come up with something else.
They have also gone by different names. At one point, a lot of them were calling themselves the Love Army, and that was a name that was coined by someone who I think looking to cast some kind of reality show, and they all rushed into her TikTok and sort of said, contact Will White. And she said, oh, his Love Army. And then they latched onto that, the Love Army. any name that they would choose for themselves is going to be mocked by a portion of people who are positioned, self-positioned as anti this fandom.
Correct.
Right. Okay. So how this fandom comes about, early summer, so it's Memorial Day of 2021. Will was a landscaper.
By the way, I think even landscaper might be a little bit overstated. He worked for a landscaping company. Like he ran a mower.
Yeah, but I mean, there's no shame in that.
No. I'm just saying it wasn't like his company or anything.
No, right. He worked for a landscaper, and he was at that time would-be model slash actor.
Right.
Good-looking young man.
Yep.
At the time.
Are you saying he's not good-looking now?
Well, we'll get into that. We'll get into that. So he had early success by doing videos that were old music, like he famously Mandy by Barry Manilow of all things.
But, I mean, honestly, it was a good choice because his target audience. Well, I don't know if they were a target at that point, but what ended up being his core audience, that's right in their wheelhouse. It's about a girl. Well, okay, it's really about a dog, but whatever. Allegedly.
And he was charming. He was very cute in the video. It was kind of like a perfect storm.
Yeah.
And it was kind of late COVID timeframe.
Yeah, I think it was mid. You know, people were just kind of like drifting a little bit because of COVID.
Yeah, still isolated, I think, a lot.
And, you know, so people are on their phones more, whatever. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, and then he released this thing and it went pretty wildly
crazy,
viral.
Crazy viral. To the extent that he was voted by his fans really helped to drive this along, but he was voted sexiest TikToker one of the years, 2022, I think he was sexiest TikToker. He became wildly popular with fans of a certain age, of Gen X and Boomer age range, older millennials too. I think there were a few of them in there. And it seemed like everybody on TikTok was duetting him or stitching him, and it was just this real love fest, very, very much a love fest at first. People were charmed by him.
Yeah.
And so the early days was women supporting women, but here again, a fandom of women, particularly older women, who were very verbally appreciative of a good-looking young man, was very offensive to some people, mostly men, but some women found it offensive that women of this age behaving the way that they were behaving. So here again, there's a value judgment that is based on not only the gender of a person, a woman,
right,
but the age of a person. So there was like age shaming.
Yep.
And you're grown ass women. You should know
better.
Sex shaming because women of a certain age shouldn't feel sexy.
That's true.
But the women banded together and kind of formed a united front against that onslaught. But as time went on, very quickly, it became divided. And there were women in the fandom who really wanted to dive into the sexy side of things. And then there were women who were like, well, we just like him.
He's cute and it's
wholesome. And can we just please keep it wholesome?
Right.
And shouldn't we be worried about him and making sure that he's doing okay?
The moms versus the...
Yeah.
The
Grotto Girls, essentially.
Yeah, yeah.
And so if you go back and you look at our first episodes on this, we talked quite a bit about how that happened and the Grotto Girls and their role in the fandom of becoming kind of the key fan club within the fandom, and that dominated, they sucked all the air out of the room.
Yeah.
To the point where he was really focused on them. The way they did it, pretty simple.
Gave him a lot of money.
And I think Mark and I will say this right up front, at the time, and really honestly, right all the way through, we have maintained that he's making money the way that kids are making, or people are making.
Nothing wrong with making money that way.
No,
in my opinion.
No, I mean, if that's how he can do it, then do it. If you have fans, it's not like he's going and reaching into their pockets. Now, we'll talk about a little bit about that later on in this episode.
Yeah.
If how that has maybe started to change, but we'll
gotten
we'll,
a bit seedier.
We'll talk about that a little later. This isn't meant to be an indictment of William, but I think that in some cases there are going to be some things that you know might seem that way. But so right now, he's at a stage where he's real on and off. He sometimes really seems to like what he does with the fandom and interacting. And then there are other times where it's just you clearly way too much. And we're getting into the fandom behavior. But it's kind of up and down with him. He's not very regularly on lives, but then he'll go live a lot and then he goes away and, you know.
Do these coincide with major purchases?
Maybe. Vacations. Possibly. I don't know. But as time went on, so you had the fans divide first, and it was really fans who wanted to be sexy versus fans who just kind of wanted to watch him on his journey.
That was it.
And then it just kept dividing and dividing and dividing, so that the grotto became very hot point, a really focal point of the fandom, where people really didn't like how they were behaving.
Yeah.
And then they kind of quieted down, and they're still doing what they're doing. They're still, as far as I know, sending him money, and they're still very actively involved in the fandom and with each other. But then since then, you had other groups kind of come about. There's like the Island, and then there's Facebook groups with their names, and then you have the anti-fans also rise up out of this sort of morass.
I'm going to give you a gift.
Yeah. Right
here. When you embark on your fandom studies career, here's a phrase that you can use free of charge.
Okay.
Fandom mitosis.
Fandom mitosis. Okay. I like it.
All
okay.
Right, so write it down, whatever.
So
I'm giving you the rights to it. Now, nobody else, only Christina.
So say how that works.
The fandom is more or less homogenous in the beginning, and then the split begins, right? So the spicy cell goes off one way, or mom-oriented cell goes off the other way, and then the spicy cell splits again because some people didn't like the grotto girls or whatever. So it splits again, and you keep just getting this multiplication of subsets of this fandom. And sometimes they come back together.
And they come back together and they go apart. And then there's a middle ground where there are what you would think would be centrist fans who – and I am positive that there are a lot of those. Well, there are those. But it gets to a point then where you are in one group or another group, and then people are watching those middle-of-the-road fans to see who they like, who they – because – certain groups are at war with each other.
Yeah.
And then you add in the...
Which is normal.
And then you have...
That's totally normal, you guys.
Then you add in the anti-fans.
Right.
And the anti-fans are at it. And then, so let's say some central fans might laugh or like or give a thumbs up to a post that...
Because it was funny
or
whatever.
...that a troll did. And you've got people in the fan base who are watching what you're liking. And then they will come and they will tell you...
Yeah.
You are now a troll. Yeah. They call anti-fans trolls. You are now a troll, and we're going to block you from the fan fund.
And if anybody else likes anything you do, they're blocked too.
And they're blocked too.
It's very gatekeeping.
It's extremely gatekeeping.
And by the way, even in the anti-fans, there are divisions there.
100%. I've been a part of them. I was lumped in with the anti-fan side, although I'm not. I don't hate the media. I don't hate Will.
Right. You just don't care.
But
I'm
really more indifferent about him. I'm more interested in how the fans work. But you know, some of my greatest friends are anti fans.
Yeah.
And some of the people that really dislike me are anti fans. There are anti fans who detest me. In fact, anti fans have treated me probably worse
than
the fans who hate me.
Yeah.
So it's and that's okay. And I mean, that's just the way that fandom works. And it's been a really fascinating living in the test case.
Yeah.
I'm like firsthand experiencing it. It is very much like a reality show.
And do you know who does not understand that fandom and anti-fandom are really just two kind of slightly different parts of the same whole? The people who are in it.
Right. No.
If you are an anti-fan, you believe that you are by definition superior to the fans because, of course, you don't waste your time on this young guy, even though you do, just in a negative way. Of course, the fans are like, well, you know, you anti-fans, all you do is hate. you know, that's, you know, that just, that's how shallow your existence is. And they're like, well, aren't you hating right now? So they're very similar. There's a, as I'm sure you'll explain, there's a lot of overlap in the behaviors of those two groups. They're basically just, like I said, they're, it's like a difference between a Labrador and a poodle.
I get what you're saying. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Like it's
not even a different species. It's just a different variety of the same animal.
It's a different variety of the same animal. Yeah. It really is. So, okay. So that's, I guess, the will verse. I mean, there's been a lot of, you know, kind of seedy things that have happened. And
right.
And we'll get into that because that gets into fan behavior. Right. But basically, it's a guy who got himself famous by doing an eye roll while singing, lip syncing to Mandy. Real notoriety and,
yeah, and
celebrity. Yeah. He's making a lot of money having done all of this. What he has not been able to do is capitalize on the opportunity that he had
to break out of that.
To break out of being just a TikTok creator and becoming something more like a model or an actor. And he still, you know, talks about, well, I'm going to do acting lessons. Well, now I'm doing acting lessons online. Will himself is adrift. He's a young man who doesn't have a lot of direction right now.
Right.
And you know, you can make the argument, is this notoriety, is this celebrity helping him or hurting him? I mean, at the end of the day, if he's being even a little smart with the money that he's made, he's ahead.
Sure. There's no way he was making that much money cutting grass.
No.
Honestly, being a TikTok personality is a perfectly fine job. You know, it might not make your grandpa proud or whatever, but you can make money doing it. You can make a living at it. It's pretty low. It should be low stress. Maybe it isn't for real, but it's low effort.
Well, certainly the way that Will does it. It's low effort. There are variations in how different creators behave and how they go about
Correct.
Their business.
Some work harder than others.
At the end of the day, it is a career choice. Is it what I would want for my son? No. I'd love him to have that kind of easy access to money.
Sure.
But I wouldn't love my son to have to do what Will is doing.
Pander.
Pander, I mean, to me is...
icky. Yeah.
I wouldn't want my son to have to do that.
Right. That's why we don't pander on this podcast. We give you shit you don't even want.
All right. So, like I said, in the next episode, we'll talk more about anti-fans, but let's start by talking about sort of reviewing uses and gratifications again. And then we'll talk about how we see that playing out in the various fandoms that we are a part of and then the various fandoms that have observed, just maybe because we exist in the world and we know now that there's such a thing as Swifties.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
I mean, there's nobody here who doesn't know that Swifties exist. But all right, so let's go first with diversion.
All right.
So fandom and media consumption as a diversion.
I mean, that's its whole purpose, right? I mean, you're not watching a movie because you really want to learn. I mean, well, you might, but you're not watching The Last of the Mohicans because you want to learn about the westward movement or something like that. You watch it because you want to be entertained. And what is entertaining? What is entertainment? Diversion from your everyday mundane life.
Right.
So diversion absolutely is the primary, I think, component of fandom.
I think that it is, and it's a pretty easy one to see.
But it's more meta than just content appreciation, right?
So say more about that.
So let's say I go and I see Last of the Mohicans. Great movie. Love it. Daniel Day-Lewis is a genius. Am I a Last of the Mohicans fan? Not really. I'm not going to go read that goddamn book. I'll tell you that right now. Mm-hmm. I'm not searching out, you know, I'm not reading all about the movie and getting the show notes and, you know, getting a lot of merch or anything. I just liked the movie. Mm-hmm. So it served that purpose. But if you kind of want to, you know, really immerse yourself in that content, one way to do that is by becoming a fan.
Mm-hmm.
So now, in addition to just the media it produces, now you have all these other diversions, like learning more about, you know, the manufacturer or performance that you appreciate, talking to like-minded people.
Right.
The social aspect is mm-hmm. huge, mm-hmm. I think.
Right. And now you're starting to get in some of the other points about uses and gratifications. But if we stay focused on diversion from what? And that
life
that, well, but what about, so what I guess I'm getting at here is that you can be a fan and find something, like you said, you can watch it and you can be like, okay, that's great. I'd love to watch that movie. If it ever comes on and you're just happening to flick through channels and you see it, I'm going to watch it.
There are movies you always, that you'll watch anytime you see them.
Yeah. It's a momentary diversion. That's media consumption, but then fandom is a different level of diversion. And then I have to ask myself, and I really, this is what interests me about fandom as a diversion. It is, it's focused around the media, but it's about something else. It's giving you other gratifications. It's giving you other uses. And what is it that you're trying to divert your attention from? How serious is the thing that you are trying to divert your attention from?
Like, say, World War One.
Okay, so I've got a good for instance about that. Great. A good World War One anecdote. One of the things that the soldiers in the trenches did as a diversion for what they were experiencing was to read a lot of, and you're going to be surprised by this, but Jane Austen.
What?
They read a lot of Jane Austen. Understand that these people, it's post-Victorian.
Yeah, that's like, but it's current events for them.
But it's not too far removed from what their life was.
It's like
was.
Reading about the 50s.
Right. Yeah. So they were very interested in Jane Austen. I learned this by reading about a fandom, the Janeites, who are
which
fans
honestly
of Jane
sounds
Austen
like
novels.
A religious movement.
I know it does.
It's like, wasn't that heresy stomped out in the 4th century by Pope Boniface or something like that?
Yeah, exactly.
He's like, curse the Janeites, anathema.
Heretics.
They are heretics. Burn them.
So, yes, that's a diversion from it. That doesn't mean that they themselves then became Janeites and started wearing costumes. They just used that as a diversion. If we look at the Willverse, and we interviewed quite a few people for the very first episode, and I've maintained contact with people, and of course, everything in the Willverse is broadcast on Twitter.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot that is just shared
freely
on Twitter and now on Threads, because a lot of the fans have migrated to Threads. But of course everyone still can see what they're saying, and it's heightened language. Yeah. It's very
extra dramatic.
It can get purple at times. It can be 100% pornographic at times, and that's, fine. I'm not judging. I'm not sex shaming. Do you? But everything's available online. So you don't really have to go digging too much. No. You don't really even need to interview anyone because you can see what they think, you can see what they're performing online. Right. And many of them talk about how Will as a diversion is something that was extremely meaningful for them because they were experiencing some pretty heavy things in their lives.
COVID,
for one thing, everybody was experiencing
midlife
that.
Crises.
Yeah.
Relationship changes.
And then
empty nesting.
Severe mental health.
Yes.
Issues.
There are definitely a number of those.
I mean, you're saying that kind of
disparagingly.
Disparagingly. But I think that we have to take that more seriously. I don't want it to be disparaging.
Okay.
Because a lot of these women were coming from situations where they were recently tried to self-harm. Hospitalized. The other day on one of his threads, he says this on Threads: getting messages about how people have lost weight or decided to step out of their comfort zone because of me makes me the most proud person ever. Thank you for sharing. Also, I'm proud of all of you, just like you are me. Hashtag inspo, hashtag keep moving forward. Okay, so we'll post this, and then his fans come in and respond. Cynically, people will look at what Will posted and say he's doing that to get people to write things nice about him because he's in some way feeding off of that validation.
I think that's somewhat accurate.
But also, look at it not cynically.
Mm-hmm.
And you take it at face value. He's engaging with his fans. He's doing what any PR or marketing person would tell him to do.
They would probably put it a little differently.
They wouldn't tell him to go and say, you make me feel so good about myself because you send me compliments, right? He would say,
appreciative of
who knows. Somebody would, whatever. They would craft that differently, but you know.
If I can in some small way contribute to your weight loss.
That would be worse too. But you know, just engage them in questions. Yeah, yeah. You know, tell me about,
right.
You know, ask them a question. And
what's the greatest thing about me, for example?
Okay. So here we go. This character has publicized the fact that she met Will. And one of those times was outside of his gym.
Dumpster pop-up.
Yeah, it was like a surprise.
Hi.
Hi.
We're people you don't know. What's up?
Hi, it's me. Remember me?
It's like, oh, I didn't recognize you without your PayPal.
I'm sorry. Is that not wrong? Mm-hmm. I mean, fair enough, right? Because yeah. Like if you...
How else would he know?
How would he know? All right, so she says, you should be very proud of yourself, William. That beautiful heart that you have has attracted so many beautiful people that felt they were no longer needed and they felt forgotten. So many are now enjoying life again and having fun, and it's all because of you. And let's not forget the beautiful friendships that have blossomed also because of you. So you absolutely should be proud of what you have built. I pray that you find the peace and happiness that you deserve. It's your turn now. Here she's illustrating something that I find when I engage with super fans, people who are really deep into the fandom life, not all, but a lot of them are feeling similar to what she's describing people felt before they found Will. At the time, remember, it's COVID. So she's saying they felt they were no longer needed. They felt forgotten.
Well, what was the big thing you talked about in the first episode? They felt seen.
Will made, and that was real. That was real to them, yeah, and they still feel that way. And I'm not mocking that at all.
No, I think that's a perfectly legitimate response if that works for you.
Absolutely. And when I posed the question to kind of get to this a while back on Twitter, and we had a lot of responses from all kinds of fandom people, not just Wilverse people. And a lot of them said, I feel like I found people who can understand me. I was going through some stuff before I got here. And I now feel like I'm a part of something and I have things to look forward to. Again, it's because it's a diversion from some pretty heavy stuff that's going on in real life, potentially. Not feeling seen, not feeling
desired,
understood,
important,
or validated in some way. Not and feeling like you're invisible in your real life is a powerful motivator to go and try and find some way to be seen
that.
For who you are. So then if you think about it and you say to yourself, okay, there are people looking for haven in fandom. If you are in some ways liminal on your own, in your real life.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you find a place where you can be
yourself
and be seen and share some of these things without being judged, theoretically. That's pretty powerful.
Right. But I don't think it's that conscious, right?
No, it's not
like they're like, I want to go be seen.
Mm-mm, no.
But they find something that they like, and then they dip their toe in and they start participating. And then all these feelings, real or imagined, right? Because not every fandom is really welcoming. But if you feel like you belong to this group and you can share these feelings that you have about the whatever the art is, then those things are real consequences of your fandom, right? You feel like you have a social network. You feel, involved with other people. You feel more involved in the whatever the media is that you're consuming, and you get more of it. Because now I watch the show and I talk about the show, or now I watched his TikTok and now I'm talking to my friends about it, which we all do to a certain extent, right? That helps create a sense of community, belonging. You feel like you're in the know.
Yeah.
And I know that's going to be something else that's going to come up.
And so all of these things in the uses and gratifications model
feed into
each other. They're all, it's a palimpsest. You know, it's like, it's not.
What in the fuck is that word you just used?
you know what that is.
I don't.
Are you?
I have no idea. That's
Wait
not
a minute,
in my 30,000.
That's 30, not 000. In your 30,000 word vocabulary.
No, it's not. You got one that I didn't have.
What it is it's a layer. It's like layering. It's words on top of words on top of words, right? So then I'm saying this figuratively is that. Yeah. And it's because these ideas exist as individual ideas or concepts,
right,
but they also overlap. There's just, you can tease them apart to say, yep, there are four different things here, but really
they're
those things are so intertwined. Yeah. Okay. All right. So then let's talk about community, because it is a huge driver for the fandom, is community and making friends, because you do make friends.
Absolutely.
I would say that the best things that I see coming out of fandoms, because maybe the media ends, maybe you just kind of fade away from enjoying the media,
sure,
whatever, the friendships, if they are true friendships, will stick.
And I think makes the original content, makes you enjoy it more. I'll give you an example. We have another podcast, you and I, with our friend Joanne.
Yes.
Our other podcast is called Vampire Insider. It's an after show of AMC Plus's or AMC's Interview with the Vampire adaptation. So I would characterize myself as a fan of the show. It was extremely well done. I would watch it, but season one is over. I probably wouldn't have given it another thought until it came out to season two. But the fact that we're now, at least tangentially, involved with this fandom, it makes me appreciate the content more. Mm-hmm. And now I'm in it, right? I do a podcast about it. I interact with people on Twitter about it. We've thought more deeply about the show than I would have if I just watched it. And plus, we made friends, right? Mm-hmm. You make friends in the fandom that found us through our podcast, but now are just, you know, good, friendly, nice people. And just an example where the becoming a member of the fandom not only gives you this social structure to live within, but it also enhances your enjoyment of the product, enhances your enjoyment of the original media, whatever it is.
And then, as I said, as time goes on, the media fades. You're going to walk away with a couple of friends at least, right?
Hopefully, yeah.
You may start out where you have a large group of friends, and then, you know, people fall away,
sure,
from it or whatever.
But you have a couple that stay with you.
But in the end, you have a couple that stay with you who become true, true friends.
And isn't that the real treasure, Christina?
Well, you know, I know you're saying, again, mockingly, but...
But I'm...
But it is honestly.
I can do both at the same time.
Yeah. No, it is honestly, I think, one of the best things that I see come out of it.
Correct.
Friendships can fail disastrously.
Oh, yeah.
Publicly.
Especially if your opinions on the media start to diverge somewhat.
Yes.
It can. Or if they're just like people that you turn out to find out, they're not really the kind of person I really like.
We have seen some spectacular
flameouts
in friendships in the Willverse.
Oh, absolutely. Honestly, it shifts. They shift daily.
There's a lot of alliances.
Yeah.
That you know, the alliances are very, very strong, and then they are not so strong. No, no, no. And then they crack, and the alliance falls apart, and then all sorts of drama happens between two people who used to be very. They thought they were good friends.
Now they're sworn enemies.
They have shared secrets with one another, and they now are sworn enemies.
And then those secrets get.
And then the secrets get used as collateral. It is Lord of the Flies sometimes.
Yeah.
In the Willverse. And I don't know if it's just because it's such a small, but it's not. It's not. Because I know that there are big fandoms where this kind of stuff happens.
Oh yeah. Even in like a fandom, and I'll give you an example of one that is generally just a super positive experience. What do you think I'm going?
Ted Lasso.
Yes. There are even people within the Ted Lasso fandom, which was a really wholesome, positive show. And these people are like out for blood on Ted Becca shippers and Nate and all.
And then that some wanted there to be the trio, the threesome relationship between Jamie,
the thruple,
Roy, the thruple. That's it, the thruple, the thruple. That really into
Jamie,
it.
Roy,
boy,
and Keeley.
Yeah, there's nothing more contentious than ships.
Oh yeah,
woo! That is when it gets.
So
that
tell
is
people.
When
so
it gets wild.
Most people probably know, but tell people what a ship is.
When you root for a couple, a coupling, or a thruppling.
The original one that I can think of is, of course, on Cheers. Sam and Diane.
Sam and Diane.
Or no, you know what? Even before that, Moonlighting. So so people were shipping Dave and Maddie because they clearly had this chemistry,
yes.
Right?
Well,
but they also hated each other, kind of, which is the hate.
The
relationship.
Hate to love, the oh hate my to gosh. Love
those
trip.
Are the favorites of the shippers. They love those. They're like, wouldn't it be great if we could just take all this hate and turn it into sex? That's what we want. That's the kind of alchemy we're looking for from this show.
Dead.
But that you're right. Shippers are that makes people mad.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
They do. And so they get really invested in this. But back to the point in hand is that these friendships can combust and
yeah.
And that adds to the little bit to the drama.
It
of,
does.
Of
and
what's going
that's
on
part of the attraction to it for many, many people.
Right.
Is not only do you get to consume the content, you get people you agree with, but it's also exciting sometimes to fight with people, right? Or to watch other people
or
fight.
Or watch other people fight. So there's different layers of it. There's you can be a part of a community and you can and it's pressure release, right? Like it's yeah. a pressure valve. Like things build up. Maybe you're not getting content you want to see or right. whatever else, but you're still existing in this fandom that yeah. is about this media. Well, maybe you're not getting the media and the same, you tread the same ground again and again. Well, so at some point, opinions are going to diverge.
Yeah.
Then you have your community versus that community on that opinion.
So you have
they're
somebody,
both fans.
Oh, yeah.
But there's like
but
a
it's
lot
heightened
of tension.
Because you're invested yeah. in not only fandom, but the way you fan.
So, but community is very important.
It is.
The friendships are real. The friendships are very important. So I wanted to give some examples of how that works. And my bias is that I think that people are too gatekeepy.
Yeah.
In the Willverse,
particularly
in a lot of fandoms, only on the in any fandom. And when I see people who are gatekeeping and who say, you cannot have that opinion.
Right.
Or we are going to isolate you and, yeah. and remove you from the family. You will be exiled. And exile is a big psychological thing for people,
sure.
especially if you are coming here as a diversion to potentially distract yourself from something pretty heavy happening in
yeah.
real life or that you have to deal with constantly, whatever it might be that you're chronically dealing with in real life that's hard. You're escaping that. By taking part in this fandom, you value the friendships and the being seen and the validation of your friends. And there are people who then say to you, okay, you can be here, but only if you think a certain way.
Right.
And now I'm not just going to police what you're doing online. I'm also going to, you know, police what's going on in your private chat groups
sure.
with your friends. So these people are then threatened with exile from this
yep.
escape. And that's bad. So I have a bias against gatekeeping of
yeah.
any kind. I think that's not okay to do. So in that sense, I'm making a value judgment on it.
Yeah.
I can't obviously stop anybody from doing that, but I can say I don't like to see it and I'll call it out.
And by the way,
see
you see that even in we're talking about a heavily female fandom when we're talking about the Willverse.
Well, it is all female. And at this point, you're the only guy that's around.
I think so. So, for example, I'm a Yankees fan. Oh, you just say Yankees fan because they won the World Series, whatever. You know, you're just jumping on the bandwagon. Were you an original fan? Do you know, can you name 10 players on the
yeah.
Yankees,
right?
That's gatekeeping.
Sure, of course. But I would say that what I'm talking about is a little bit not bandwagon jumping, but long-term you're here. I just don't like your opinion now.
Yeah.
And because I have somehow more authority than you do, I'm going to, you'll never eat lunch in
That's
this
right.
town again.
That's
you
right.
know?
Welcome. Go sit with the losers.
Yeah. You're done here. You're a troll. Banished.
Yes. And
to
of course,
the trolldom.
If you ever watched any 80s movies, you know that loser table is going to end up winning whatever competition is happening and they're going to put you in your place.
Inevitably.
You
inevitably.
Mean girls.
Okay. So that is my bias. When I say to you that friendships in the fandom, whether they're people I like who have friendships or they are people that I really do not like that have friendships
yeah.
or I don't know. I
but you celebrate,
celebrate the friendships,
right?
Like the friendships are the thing that really fundamentally I think
the most
important thing.
The most valuable.
The most valuable. Okay, so this is one of Will's fans on Threads called Steph Writing, and she says this. This is being addressed to Will. He's he's tagged in it. In fact, she's responding to Will's question from above. You are a once-in-a-lifetime gift. Thank you for being just you. You've helped and inspired so many of us. This amazing community you have built was meant to be. I believe we were all meant to cross each other's paths. We all needed you like you needed us. I will forever be grateful for everything you have given us, the inspiration, the friendships we've made, and for helping me live my life again for everything. You have something very, very special. You have my heart forever. I love you.
But definitely highlighting the friendship part, right?
Highlighting the friendship part. You know, they give this, many of the fans who will respond to him or talk about him, they always give this, it's this effusive praise for him, how much they love him, how important he is to their lives, and how valuable he has been in terms of perking them up or pulling them through, that being this great diversion. They always mention their friendships.
Right, which is great. Like I said, I think that's the most valuable part. The content, I'm sure it's wonderful, you know, whatever you like, you like. But isn't a friendship much more valuable than just a fleeting entertainment? I would say so.
Absolutely. Well, I think so. Now, I guess the real rubber would hit the road if you said, okay, you can have the media or you can have the friend.
Right.
Which do you want?
Bye, friend.
And honestly, we do see that happen. And that, as you mentioned before, it is something that can lead to ruptures in the friendships.
Like, I'm not really into him anymore. Uh-huh. Well, I can't be friends with, you know, a troll like you.
Yeah,
I just said I wasn't into him anymore. Doesn't matter. Troll.
Right.
Death to you.
If you're not performing fan in a way that validates or mirrors maybe some people's, not everybody.
In the
extreme. Most people are like, you know, yeah, I can understand how to be in an adult relationship without having to.
I kind of know how that works, sure.
Like, you know, I'm not a huge fan of Star Trek, but you and I still get along pretty well.
You gave me a Star Trek jacket.
you know, because I care for you.
There you go. Do you want to wear it?
No.
We might be at a crossroads.
What? Why?
You won't wear a Star Trek jacket? What is wrong with you?
Well, I'd rather, you know, I would dress up. Like, if we went to a con, yeah. I absolutely would get into the...
Right.
I just like
wearing the ears.
Yeah, well, anything. Oh, I would definitely be a Mr. Spock, but like a lady Mr. Spock.
Okay, that's a Vulcan.
A Vulcan.
Mr. Spock.
Yeah, I'd want to be.
I want to be one of them Spocks. Okay, you could be a Spock. That's great. Oh, but a lady Spock.
A lady Spock.
You just said you wanted to be a lady Mr. Spock. I don't even know what I'm going to do with that.
A lady one.
I'm going to have to parse that somehow. Figure out how to fit that into my multiverse.
My generation is showing.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
Lady Mr. Spock. What's the matter with things? It's like kind of low-key misogynistic.
Yeah,
kind of. And
just like really ignorant. Yeah. Of the fans, of the fandom, of the content. Like, do you even Star Trek, bro?
No.
No, you don't.
I don't.
I know you don't.
All right.
I like you anyway.
All right. Yeah. Let's talk now about a third element of the uses and gratifications model and see how it applies to things that we see in fandom. Okay. This is identity building.
Oh, 100% we see that.
So, and it goes... I've read about it in the fandom book, the fandom materials that I've been reading. I've read about it as the identity that you get as a viewer of the media or a consumer of the media. So that means like talking in a certain way or using a certain, dressing a certain way or whatever.
Fandoms will often develop jargon.
Yeah.
Right? To kind of not only bond within their group, but also exclude those who are not a part. They're not real fans, right?
Right.
So jargon, dressing, obviously, I mean, but sports teams. People always, you know, they'll all dress alike. They'll wear the jersey. Are they going to be called out onto the field? No, they're not going to be on the field. There's no reason for them to wear that jersey other than to, you know, make themselves part of that fandom and to identify as that fan.
Yeah.
As a fan. And there are many people who do, that's part of their identity is, so my name is Bill, I'm a plumber and a Jets fan, go Jets, you know, and that's who they are.
Yeah.
That's how they want you to think of them, is as a Jets fan.
Right.
Poor Jets fan.
All right. And then there's identity in the way of not just, using lingo or talking a certain way. Like in the Willverse, we see Gen X women, boomer women saying, "That's sick, brah."
Yeah, that's sick, brah. Nice drip. That last joint was fire.
they all start talking like him.
Yeah.
You know, this guy is 20, you know, he's not a worldly guy. He's 23-year-old, just kind of like a good old boy.
Talks like a guy, yeah.
And he talks like a kid. Like, they sound, these are women my age and older in some cases, and they sound like I'm talking to my 19-year-old
son. Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure they're all out learning Fortnite dances and shit. You know?
There were like a bunch of them wanted to learn how to play,
Grand Theft Auto. No, and there was a big controversy where this one fan
could play, and she was good.
She was good at GTA, and she would play with him, and that, you know, gave her access to him, and it made other people mad AF.
It was just terrible. But then the other is identity as kind of what you were talking about there. Like, I'm a Jets fan, or is this identity within the fandom, and that leads to status, right?
So
identity as status, or who you are perceived to be, and where you rank within the rest of the fandom.
So much of social media, especially in fandoms, is image crafting. Right, mm-hmm. You're trying to get people to think of you in a certain way. Oh yeah,
not consciously, probably.
Well, sometimes, but you're right. Like, I'm that fan that jumps out from behind dumpsters. Right, that's who I am. I'm the dumpster.
And some of the fandom admires that.
Yeah,
and says nothing's wrong with that. And other people in the fandom
say, "That's a little odd."
But I'm not really going to comment on it. And then there are some people that go, "Well, that's terrible."
You psycho.
And I'm going to comment on it.
Right, but it's a lot of image crafting. Like, you know, I'm the smarter fan, or I fan in this. You know, I'm an OG, right? I'm an original fan, so I'm better. Give me more status. I have step aunt's phone number, you know, whatever it is. And it's all this collection of image building pieces that they, like you said, they, you know how I feel about status, big driving forces in interpersonal relationships, fandoms and communities, et cetera. So they have their fandom, their interest in the media, but they also think about their position and, like you said, image in this community now. Mm. So do they want to be known as a thought leader, for example? Do they want to be known as the best meme maker or the person who has his step aunt's phone number, whatever it is?
Right.
They like that often, not always, often like that kind of recognition, and they work hard at trying to keep that image valid and recognized and want to hide things that maybe might detract from that image.
Right, and that's true. And we see that. I see that in every fandom I encounter.
Yeah.
I absolutely see it. And it looks different in every fandom. Or it looks different within fandoms. So, as you said,
absolutely,
thought leaders. But you're also going to have people who are really good artists.
Yeah.
And those people are either drawing art, or they might be ridiculously talented at making edits, video edits, which is a huge component of fan work. Even, you know, in the situation like Interview with the Vampire, they're working with clips from the series and they're really doing amazing edits. Ted Lasso, there was such good fan art. There's many, many people in all of the fandoms, including the Willverse, that are talented edit makers, really talented authors, fanfic authors,
and
Interview with the Vampire fandom.
They will sometimes use that status to be valuable to a group. You want to have the good meme maker in your group. You want to have the good video editor. You want to have the thought leader or someone who has a good reputation in the fandom, because that lends credibility to your group, which then reflects on you and increases your status.
It's all about like perceived proximity to the talent,
absolutely,
right?
And that's
so
why,
and including the media itself.
Yeah.
The closer that you can get to the actual media, you are really at the top level of the fandom, and, I guess, stratosphere.
And like looking at the Willverse, one of the big status generators is getting him to follow you or like a comment or mention your name during a live or something, right?
Well, and that's pretty low key. That's not even as...
Oh, yeah, it gets crazier than that.
You know, the other, in the Willverse, the top of the top is to have direct access to Will, meaning that he is actively DMing you.
Yeah, or his family.
His family, you are in some way involved with his family. Second to that would be like his relatives, his like his extended family, his cousin, his his uncle. Then you would go to his, you know, his friends.
Yeah.
He's got a variety of guys around him. They're
hangers
all
on.
They're all making money off of this really essentially same fan base.
Well, he's franchised.
He has franchised. And when you want the homophobic incel basement dweller,
we have that available.
That model is available to you.
Yes, exactly.
That one is, it's like maybe 2 degrees of separation from Will.
Right.
Or influence, you know, like, oh, God. All right, so as the closer that you can get to Will, if you can get direct contact with him, you are really in a good spot.
Yeah.
And That's a high status position. It's also a position with a big target on your back.
Oh, absolutely.
Because as much as it might cause people to want to be in a group with you or have you in their group.
Also jealousy.
There is also the side that is, and it doesn't even have to be jealousy. It could be just like confusion or resentment. There are some people that would be jealous. Yeah. But then there are some people that are like, what in the fuck?
Yeah.
You know,
who
like,
the fuck are you?
Why are you doing the things, passing judgment on you for doing the things that got you the proximity in the first place, right? So you get, there's positive attention. But there's also negative attention. But the negative attention can kind of put you in the victim role, which can give you more positive attention. It's
so complicated.
Wild and complicated situation.
Are you sure you want to go into this field? It seems like a lot of work.
To study it is really interesting, though.
You could do something easy like, you know, particle physics.
Okay, and so like I mentioned before, all of these things, even though they seem separate, they're all, you know, we talk about them as separate concepts. They're all intertwined. And so along with this status conversation is another one of the uses and gratifications, which is surveillance. And surveillance.
That doesn't sound scary at all.
I think that surveillance is the thing that would put you into position of thought leader.
Yeah.
Or behind the scenes person, someone, right? Like, so the whole point here is to post and find things and be the first one to share this information or gatekeep the information.
That's right.
And you have the information and you're pretty sure nobody else has that information. And you're now the one who can dole that information out in drips and drabs.
Right.
And that leads to a very active back channel network in fandoms,
right?
And I watched it form in the vampire fandom because I usually arrive at fandoms late,
or later,
like the Ted Lasso fandom. I found after several,
it took us a year before we watched that show.
I didn't really, you know, that those were well established fandoms by the time I joined them. Succession, same thing.
By the way, I always promised to do this, and I never did it. I have to shout out to John, my brother, who recommended that we watch Ted Lasso. And he always yells at me for, he's like, you never gave me any credit for recommending Ted Lasso. So, John, this is for you, my man.
Thank you, John. What I saw was you would see people post, okay, I'm forming this Discord, or I'm forming a group chat. If you want to be in a group chat. And it was just a friendly invitation.
That's how they start.
That's how they start. And I saw them literally starting online, and I thought, oh, that's so interesting.
Here we go. Now the mitosis is continuing.
That's so interesting. And it has to, right? Because because a fandom, especially something like for television series or a musician or whatever, that's going to be a necessarily just massive
fandom. It gets unwieldy.
So it has to break into smaller and smaller circles.
Because you want that personal interaction. Mm-hmm. And if you're in a fandom of a million people and you're all just trying to exist in the same space, talking about the same thing, you're not going to get noticed.
No.
So, but what you do, you're like, yeah, but I like this one thing about the fandom. Mm-hmm. Come to me, my friends,
or
and we're
going
to talk about this. Or
yeah.
I have Jason Sudeikis' phone number. Come to me, and I will give it out one digit at a time over the next few months.
And not in any order.
No, not in any order. That's extra. You have to make me your queen.
Oh my God.
So you see those back channel.
You see the back channel stuff happening where you have people who know things and they're sharing those things.
Right.
And it's about the media. It's about other people in the fandom.
Oh, and we fully participate in that because we find people who are expert in certain things. And we incorporate them into the podcast when we can, right?
Oh, of course, yes.
You know about show business? We don't. Come on in, talk to us about it.
Please talk to us about it. Yeah, absolutely. But that in the Willverse, it's when you get to the people who know things and then are sharing them.
You're talking about a kid's personal life.
A lot of it.
Because there's not a lot of other stuff to talk about because, I mean, he doesn't generate a lot of content.
Yeah.
There's not a movie you can go see or a TV
show.
The
content that he provides now is some stuff that comes out from him where like he'll go on a live and he's recently he took a trip to Mexico.
Okay.
And he tweeted on Threads about it. He's not on Twitter anymore. He was on Threads. He posted about he's traveling to Mexico and he kind of all the way along he was posting on Threads, and then he did a live or a TikTok or something, so then he jumped on and everybody was a part of it. It was kind of exciting. But then the drama is around some of the drips and drabs that come out, and you've got investigators, the seekers of the information. They are very good at what they do.
Oh, yeah.
They will.
I saw two glasses on that table.
Right.
Who else is there, sir?
I'm not. Within the last couple of days before recording this, it came out that there was a young woman who was with him in Mexico, and that was kind of caused some uproar. And they were a little shocked to find out that he had a woman there.
Yeah.
And then his response, I guess, was so what? She's just a friend. And okay, so yes, they can zoom in on corners of videos. And they found on this one most recently, he picked up a glass after, swearing she's just a friend, it was just a friend's trip.
Yeah.
And he picked up a glass to
and
take
it said
a drink.
Spanish fly
no,
on it.
Oh, it okay. had a long blonde hair attached to it.
And they saw that on a video?
They caught
what
it
resolution,
on a video.
What resolution are your fucking phones?
No.
I can. I guarantee you, if he was on an iPhone and I was on an Android, I couldn't see it if there was a lion in the scene somewhere. Because it's like that blurry 1984.
They caught that there was a hair. So then that gets publicized, And it's that's the kind of information that this is
that to me is a little bit terrifying.
But.
Because you're trying to curate your online presence and. It fails.
Right. Okay. So there is that. And I think that is part of the diversion. I think that is what, when the media, let's say the media is on hiatus, a TV show is off, you'll see a fluorescence of art.
How much investigation did we do on the first season episodes looking for Easter eggs?
Yeah.
And I mean, we're Googling Bosch paintings.
But let's say there's, you're in hiatus.
Oh,
there's
yeah.
no media coming yeah. from the source.
I saw he tweeted from an airport, right? And you're like, it's got to mean something, right?
It gets wild.
Yeah.
But it's real. That is what the media becomes then.
Yeah.
And so then knowledge is power. But then when it becomes about his personal life,
yeah,
that's when it gets overreaching.
Because there's really so much, there's not a bright line between his personality, online personality life and his life.
Right.
Because all he does
is
he just gets on and he talks about going to Tim's.
That's part of, if you would ask someone what they like about him.
Yeah, they like that.
They like that they feel that connection with him, that they feel like he's a part of the family.
Right. Now, it's not necessarily that it's healthy to give them that, but I understand that they like that because, and you know what we're talking about here, that parasocial relationship.
Mm-hmm, yep.
And that buttresses and even intensifies that parasocial relationship, if you can get that little glimpse of his personal life that, you might not have seen otherwise. And you can learn more stuff the media want to know who shirts you wear type of stuff. Mm-hmm. That really helps solidify that parasocial relationship feeling in you, not in him, But in you, you feel mm-hmm. that parasocial relationship stronger.
Yeah. Well, and he does
episode
a lot to
whatever that was.
He does a lot to feed that by yeah. telling them, you know, I love you and
yeah.
you know, things like he reaffirming for them that yes, they are a part of the family. Now, there's a darker side to that. As I said, things with him ebb and flow more now than they did the last time that we recorded yeah. at length about this, so that he will at times lash out at the fans
yeah.
because it just becomes overwhelming.
It's too much. Yeah.
It becomes overwhelming to him. He's honest. He speaks a lot about his mental health issues.
Yeah.
And he's honest about that. It feels very intimate. He lets people in.
I would say he's open. Mm. Not so much. I don't know if it's honesty necessarily, but he's very open with sharing
things. He overshares. I mean, even in a, you know, like.
Yeah. If you want to protect your private life, that's not the way to do it.
Because then now everybody feels like they have a stake yeah. in how you manage
right.
that aspect of your private life
sure.
that you've been open about. And then yeah. now here you are. Now you've got people that are in your business. Similarly, having knowledge can also set up a contest like that goes beyond friendly. At first, you're just like, oh, it's kind of fun. We're all looking
yeah,
and
yeah.
finding something.
Yeah.
But then as tidbits become scarcer or other people reach higher echelons of proximity to the
yeah.
– they're going to get more scoops.
Right.
And then you're not getting as many. And so I have heard from fans that one of the aspects that was really getting obnoxious, this contest to find stuff to
yeah.
post first, that you have to be – first
you got
about
a scoop.
It.
Yeah, you got to get a scoop.
I see in the there's a Matthew Good, the actor Matthew Good.
Yes.
There's a Matthew Good fandom. I'm also part of the Matthew Good fandom.
You're in a lot of fandoms.
I am. I'm a fan. What can I tell you? In the Matthew Good fandom, there's a very strong ethic around citation.
What?
So because they're using Photoshop and they're manipulating images and things
right.
like that.
Well, I agree that you should label those as
and then they share them and then what can happen is that
somebody
people
else will
can
just
come
take
in.
It.
And you see that also in the
sure.
interview where the fans are like, hey, please it's great that you're sharing
credit
my art,
me.
But please credit me
yeah.
so that I
watermarks
that I,
people.
Yeah. But and that makes sense to me. But yes, so it can turn people off. If they feel like it's getting to be too much of a competition of who knows something
yeah.
first, and then that can breed resentment. It doesn't mean that people will necessarily leave the fandom, but that means that within the fan side of people who love the media, remember here, we're not talking about people who don't love the media.
Oh, yeah, right.
We're talking fully about people who right. love the media here.
And the other reaction it can have is also kind of an ick reaction, right?
Mm-hmm.
So like, hey guys, I found out what size underwear he wears. Here's a screenshot here. You can see the tag. And some people are like, you know what? That's a lot. That's
okay.
a lot.
Well, but that's it, right? Because I think one of the most interesting things in fandom for me is to see how people who they all love the media, but how there are hard and fast boundaries for
right.
some people. And for others, they can blow right by those boundaries.
Oh, yeah.
And early on, you saw this a lot. The initial split within the fandom was sexification
yeah.
versus the woobification
right.
of Will. You know,
yeah.
like they
yeah.
turned Will into their shining baby boy woobie.
Right, right.
Or they were like sex god, right?
Yeah.
So that's one of the initial ruptures of the sort of Will-verse. But like even fans who think he's sexy, they'll come up against a point where they go, that's too far. And
yeah.
I I've seen it. So even on the sexy end, so the sexy arm breaks off, then you go, well, that's sexy. Wait, no, that's too much. He's
Ooh,
gone too
yeah,
far there,
my God.
Or you're
yeah.
going too far.
Yeah.
And a lot of times it's to do with edits in the Willverse.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, they'll go, okay, these are good edits.
Yeah.
And then
all of a sudden you're like, oh,
beyond, and then they move
God.
Beyond a certain point and they're like, whoa, that's in
wow.
bad taste. And I've said to several people, you just hit your boundary. You
yeah,
see where your boundary
yeah, exactly.
is.
Exactly.
You see where your boundary
Stop
is.
Stop the car, Clark.
And now you know. So then I think I've said to one or two of them that have talked to me about this, now looking back, can you understand where you crossed their boundary?
Right. Like,
can you understand where
they were fine six sawhorses back.
yeah.
Right? And you blew through those.
You blew through those.
Now,
so
you didn't go launching yourself off the end of the ramp, but you knocked over some sawhorses.
Yeah. And so, and this is something that I've
And I bet you they aren't self-aware enough to be able to identify.
Probably not.
Empathize with
Probably
that.
Not. So this is something that I've noticed in the Willverse, though, is that women who are really in it, they understand where their boundaries are.
Yeah.
Feeling those boundaries, like, overshot, or if being behind, like, you're past someone else's boundary, there's tension in that. Because they feel protective of their lane, whatever their lane is. And they would like it if more people were in their lane, right? Yeah. So you could see that. But, like, because I'm not invested in any one opinion. I look at it, it's just your opinion.
Yeah.
It's just your opinion, you know. But when there's a boundary crossed, those people are terrible, awful people. When you've crossed someone's boundary, you're an awful, terrible person.
But then they think, like, you're terrible for judging me.
Yeah.
Right? Even though you judged the shit out of the people who went blowing past your comfort zone.
Right.
Now somebody's saying, oh, you went past my comfort zone. You're like, you suck. Right. What is wrong with you? You're a loser. I'm fanning the right way.
I'm
jerk.
That's right. That's right. It's like, you know, this way, my way is the right way. So all of those are all kind of the points. But for me, this is where it gets super interesting to see how in fandom, everybody loving the media, but maybe loving it differently, there can be some incredibly what you would call, like, anti-fan behavior. Like, the things, the real trolling, just being awful to people, like
calling their jobs.
You know? I mean, on the extreme. On the extreme, that could happen. It's more of, like trying to exile people. It's power plays. It's really, there's some bad.
It's extreme.
It can be very extreme. Why don't we stop here? We'll talk more about fan behavior next episode.
Oh, so we're going to be on this for a little while.
We're going to be on this for a little
while. If you don't like this, this is that content we're forcing on you. Because we like it. I think it's really interesting.
In the next episode, we'll talk about gatekeeping and how that works and how you get mean girling and bully. I mean, where it can get down to downright bullying behavior. Fan on fan. This is going to be... The fans on the fan.
It's like the old Mad Magazine thing.
Fan versus fan.
Yeah, there's one dressed in white, one dressed in black.
But
they're both birds somehow.
But see, the thing is, this is where we're going to get in the next episode, is you can't just divide it into good and bad.
There are good and bad in every segment of what we talk about.
And
mostly
every
bad.
Single individual.
Mostly bad.
No, but in every single individual, it can get
nobody
really...
is monolithically evil with very few exceptions.
No, but... In order to complicate fandom studies, right, I think you have to step away from looking at it as just fan equals good and anti-fan equals bad. And that's not just – that's something that I read in the anti-fan book that I mentioned. It's in a chapter called When Hated Characters Talk Back, Twitter Hate and Fan Celebrity Interactions, Chapter 14 by Bertha Chin. And so I think that more complex way of looking at it and saying fan, yes, but doesn't just necessarily mean good.
Yes.
It can mean fanning and engaging in
bad behavior. Or maybe you're the fan of somebody who's a bad person or whatever.
Well, and we'll talk through that in the next episode. So... Yeah. Thank you for coming to listen to us each week, everyone. We really appreciate it. If you would like to follow us on Twitter, where Mark is hilarious and I am not, come on and
find
us.
You are hilarious sometimes.
Mark is at Mark Eats Peach. I am at Christina Gen X. And we have a Twitter page for our podcast, which is at Extemporaneous2. All right. I'm going to say bye.
Peace out, Cub Scouts.
Wow.
It became very quickly
It's science-y sounding, which, you know, he's a big science fan, isn't he?
Well, he's definitely into chemicals.
Let's say
that.
There you go. Okay, so chemistry, that's important. Organic chemistry, even, I bet.
Oh, boy.
A little O-chem.